Dear Dharma friends, we are discussing Kaggavisana Sutta. This comes in the Kuddaka Nikaya Sutta Nipata. So basically, Sutta Nipata is accepted as one of the oldest books of the Dhamma, and it represents very deep aspects of the teaching. And again, it is mentioned that it is one of the books talking about the early years of the Buddha's life. So basically, we have discussed a couple of verses in this sutta, and there are many verses, around 40 verses are there, and we have already discussed three verses. Actually, all the verses are emphasizing the seclusion. So don't know how many of you may leave your homes after completing this session, because it is again and again emphasizing the life of a person who is maintaining some sort of a solitude or solidarity, maintaining kind of a aloneness. And again, therefore, these all the verses are attributed to Paccheka Buddhas, and our Buddha actually mentioned to Venerable Ananda one after the other. But anyway, the commentary says all are the verses of the Paccheka Buddhas, and once they have become the Paccheka Buddha, so people are interested about how they have become or how they have enlightened and what was the most proximate cause. So once they ask that, so they are explaining their attainment using this kind of verse. So this shows some sort of a proximate cause of for their attainment, and each verse is therefore a kind of a theme or kind of a cause for another person to become enlightened. Now let's go to the 38th verse. So actually starting from 35th, because it indicates that there are other verses belonging to other suttas. As you know, there are many suttas available in in the Sutta Nipata. And Kaggavisana Sutta, starting from the 35th verse. And here, now we have completed 36 and 37. And today we can start to talk on the 38th. So it goes like this. Vanso visalova yatha visatto putte sudare sucha ya apekha. Vansakkalirova asajjamano eko chare kagga visana kappu. So eko chare kagga visana kappu is the kind of the repeated statement. Again and again we can recognize in all the verses. Eko chare kagga visana kappu. Having realized something that this person has decided to be alone like a rhinoceros horn. So in this, actually, vanso visalova yatha visattu. As a widespread bamboo becomes entwined. So, you know, if you have seen the bamboo trees, so there are many bamboo trees as a bush. There are many. So all are entwined. All are in a way kind of entangled. So there are, say, roots. There are the branches. Trunks, all are somewhat entwined, and therefore it is difficult to someone to cut it. So if someone is taking axe or a knife to cut the whole bamboo tree, so it is a bit difficult because there are many bamboo trees all together like a group. Puttesu daresu cha ya apekha. Now there's a kind of a simile given this bamboo tree, which is entangled, entwined to various other things. So similarly, the people are entangled with their wives, children, and all the loved ones. Vansa kalirova asajjamano. On the other hand, there is bamboo shoot, which is simply not entangled or entwined with anything. It is simply going ahead, being alone. Eko chare vispa kagga visana kappo. Like that, may I try to stay alone. So in order to come to some sort of an understanding to this verse, so we can recognize or we can go through the story behind the verse. Actually, each and every verse has a beautiful story, and that is in a way giving us some sort of a poetic or some sort of a aesthetic aspect to this Kaggavisana Sutta. And here also there were three Paccheka Bodhisattvas during this lesson one Kassapa. You know, before our Buddha, the Buddha Gautama, there is another Sammasambuddha called Kassapa. So during his time, these three Paccheka Buddhas, who are not yet Paccheka Buddhas, they are actually developing themselves. They are Paccheka Buddha to be, and Bodhisattva. And they all three became monks of the Kassapa Buddha's Sasana. So at that time, so as we have discussed in a previous occasion also, these three monks also are quite interested in developing mindfulness, and therefore they are practicing Gata Pachagata Vata. Gata Pachagata Vata. So here what it means is that when you are going outside the monastery, so you are taking your mindfulness. While you are being outside, still you are trying to maintain mindfulness. And on the way back, also you are maintaining mindfulness. So this is called Gata Pachagata Vata. While going out or while leaving the monastery, you have the same mindfulness. While you are being outside, you have it. And on the way back, you are getting it back. So this is also not an easy thing, as we discussed on the very first day, that some are capable of taking it outside while you are leaving your house, leaving your monastery, you are carrying it. But while being in the outside, you have to engage with so many activities. As a result of that, in between, you lose your mindfulness. Then again, you are coming back. Sometimes you don't have it. Sometimes you lose your mindfulness while engaged with various activities. And on the way back, you are able to re-establish mindfulness. Sometimes while you are going out or leaving the home, you might not have mindfulness. You may have kind of a trouble, or you have some commitments and all these due to various reasons. You didn't have mindfulness when you are leaving house. But while you are engaged in the outside, probably you may be able to regain mindfulness. So on the way back, you are able to re-establish. So likewise, such variations happens as we are developing mindfulness. So this is kind of a practice that we need to try to achieve in a way, because constantly we forget to maintain mindfulness. So that is the difficult part. Maintaining mindfulness is the difficult part. Time to time, we may be maintaining mindfulness. Time to time, suppose like today, we establish mindfulness during the walking and sitting. So this is kind of a regular program. So during the program, you may be able to develop mindfulness. But how about the other days? So during those days, are you able to maintain mindfulness? So are there lapses in your mindfulness? So these are the areas that we have to check out in order to have kind of a developed mindfulness or continuous mindfulness. So these three Paccheka Buddha to be, those Bodhisattvas as monks, were practicing this Gata Pachagata Vata. And after they are passing away, they actually reborn in the heavenly realm. So they couldn't attain arahantship during the Kassapa Buddha's time. But as a result of their sila and this practice, they were able to reborn in the heavenly realm. Then after that, they again reborn in the human realm. And one, the most eldest person as the great king in the kingdom of Varanasi. And the other two had some other kingdoms. Those are some provincial kings. So the interested point here is those two provincial kings, when they have somewhat grown up, they were able to recall, or they were able to regain their wholesome mind. And at this time, there is no any Buddha, Sammasambuddha. But now these two, from their old habit, from their old practice, from their old developed wholesomeness, was able to attain Jhana. And through that, they were able to reflect back coming out of the jhana, they were again able to reflect back various phenomena, how they are impermanent and how to and develop vipassana. And through that, they were able to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. Now they are, so both of them become two Paccheka Buddhas. After they becoming enlightened, they check how this fortune has happened. Because there are many people who couldn't do it, but how we both are able to achieve it? What was the previous karma? And they were able to recall their past lives. So they understood, okay, during the Buddha Kassapa, they two and another person was cultivating this mindfulness. And as a result of this, now with little effort, we are able to achieve it. And at the same time, they got a kind of a curiosity, what happened to this third person? Now, we too are able to achieve it while being the provincial kings. But how about the other third person who were quite helpful to us and who are actually exhort us and speak to us and again always trying to avoid us from evil? So he's the chief in a way. So what happened to him? So as a way of gratitude, so these two Paccheka Buddhas were reflecting. And at that time, they understood, okay, this person has become the king of the Varanasi. But unfortunately, he is entangled with various activities. So he has the kingdom, which is a larger kingdom compared to the other two. It's a larger kingdom. So he has become the chief person, the supreme king of the king of Varanasi. And he has his wife, children, and the residence and all these things. So he was quite entangled with all the duties, responsibilities, and everything. So he, in a way, stuck there. Now, once these two Paccheka Buddhas understood that, so they thought, okay, we need to show him the path as well. Because he is such a good person who used to exhort us, advise us to show us the path, but now he is in the trouble because he is quite entangled with so many worldly responsibilities, so many activities, and he is with a lot of obligations towards the family, kingdom. So now he is trapped in a way. Now we should help him. How are we going to help him? So they thought, okay, let's find a good time. And they recognize one time the king is coming out of the palace and going to a garden. So while he is approaching the garden, so they found a bamboo tree. And they sat on the bamboo tree, under the bamboo tree. So at that time, king was passing by and he noticed these two Paccheka Buddhas. Actually, what happened was there were many people around who are admiring the king and the, when king was going by. And they were, you know, cheering the king and all these things. And the king was quite happy because the subordinates are cheering him. So he was simply looking around and checking whether everyone is happy, whether everyone is looking at me. Are there anyone who is not noticing me? So likewise, he was checking around, looking around. At that time, he noticed these two Paccheka Buddhas just sitting under the bamboo tree without any notice of him. So it's a kind of a new thing for him. Because when the king is going through the kingdom, so everyone coming, I mean, everyone stopped their all activities and they come out in order to see the king. But now these two people are not interested. So they mind their own business. So the king was somewhat curious, so he get down from the elephant and then approach the Paccheka Buddhas. And they ask, and then he asked, and Bante, what are you? So it is new to him, so he is asking, who are you? What are you? They said, great king, we are called not getting stuck. So this is the answer these two Paccheka Buddhas have given. So we are called not getting stuck. We are quite free. We can move around at any time. We are quite free. We are not entangled to anything. We are not bound to anything. We are not attached to anything. As a result, we enjoy a lot of freedom. Anytime we can live, anytime we can go anywhere we like. So we are completely free. We are not stuck. So they mention that, and then they quickly get out of the seat and lifted to the sky, and they went out. The king was somewhat shocked because these two people are not the ordinary people, so he understood. And they are also telling a good lesson to him. And he reflected to himself, how about me? How about my situation? Then he understood, I am completely stuck. I am in the mud. So I have a lot of responsibilities. I have to look after my queen. I have to look after my children. I have to look after my kingdom. I have to attend to various majestic activities. A lot of meetings in today's terms. A lot of COVID meetings. And a lot of troubles are there. So I am completely stuck. I can't go out. So everybody depends on me. So I am completely stuck in this situation. How am I going to get out of this? So at this time, he is actually reflecting himself and how he has to be free. And what was the situation that he can take as an example? So he actually take the example of this bamboo tree. That actually those two Pacheka Buddhas taking the example of the bamboo tree, where the bamboo tree has so many, say, small plants or trunks. They are entwined. Everything is as a huge, say, group. And branches, leaves, trunks, and everything is entwined. So therefore, you can't uproot it. But similarly, when a woman is entwined with so many responsibilities, he has to look after the mother, he has to look after the father, he has to look after the children, has to look after the wife, and maybe some certain children may be, say, sick, and you have to look after them, and you have to go to the office, there are many responsibilities there, and you have to go to the market, have a lot of responsibilities there. So many, many things are there. Quite stuck. And he noticed that two Pacheka Buddhas have noticed that there's one bamboo shoot just not entangled with anything, not entwined with anything, just going out as an independent bamboo shoot, not getting stuck. So that is capable of going out without any trouble. So now he is taking the kind of an example from that, inspiration from that, and now he is deciding, Eko chare kagga visana kapu. May I be alone like a rhinoceros horn. One should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So this is the theme or kind of inspiration happened in his mind by looking around this bamboo tree. So he understood this whole scenario. So it has given him a lot of inspiration. Even though all these things are there, let me independent. Let me have my independence, my freedom. So by reflecting like this, he was able to regain the concentration because he is a capable person who has a lot of merits, a lot of wholesome power, and he without going long, he too was able to become enlightened. He has become a Pacheka Buddha. Now, here actually, once people have asked, what was the real cause, what was the theme, what was the inspiration for you to become a Pacheka Buddha, so then he has referred this verse. Now, we can learn a few things from this situation that there are many responsibilities. Say, as lay people, you all have a lot of responsibilities. And it is mentioned in the Dhammapada also, Natang dalhang bandhana mahudira, yadayasang darujang pabbajancha. Now, in the good old days, so they are using various, threads or ropes in order to bind people. suppose there is a person, a thief. So if he want to take to some from one place to the other place, so he was bound to something. He was using a rope. Suppose his hands are bound. Therefore, he can't escape. So therefore, such bondage, such iron or wood or hemp. So those are the bondages that they were using. And those are, in a way, people consider as kind of a huge or difficult bondage. But the wise say they are not the real bondage. Na tang dalhang bandhana mahudira. Yadayasang darujang pabbajancha. So the wise people say, so those bondages, those say ropes or say iron made with iron or wood or hemp, whatever it is, so they are not the strong bondage. But saratratta manikundalesu, the bondage or the desire, the attachment people have to a lot of these manikundalesu, a lot of their wealth. So they are attached to those wealth, say to your house, to your lot of other wealthy points, so wealthy things. So you are attached to that. So you can't leave them. If someone is trying to get that, so you are ready to die for that. So much of attachment. Not only that, puttesu daresu cha ya apekha. And not only that, the most huge bondage is to your wife, to your children, to your husband. So those are the huge bondage, not those previously what we mentioned. Those bondage using the, say, iron, wood or hemp. So those are not the real bondage, but the real bondage is the desire, the attachment that you have, the clinging you have towards your husband, wife, children, your belongings, to your house, your car, to your wealth. So that is the strong bondage. So etang dalhang bandhana mahudira o harinang sithilang dupa muncha. Now this bondage what we have discussed later is the supreme kind of or difficult bondage. Even that one has left aside, they are able to cut it off. Etam pi chetvana paribbajanti anapekkino kama sukhang pahaya. So one becomes not interested of these sensual pleasures, and one will leave aside all every those things, and then he leaves the home. So this is basically available in Dhammapada, which basically says that the bondage of that you have towards your house, but your wealth, your occupation, your say reputation, to your children, to your wife, is more stronger than the bondage of the typical, say, shackles and all these things. But there are people still who can even let go of that. They leave aside that, they leave aside all sensual pressures and are able to, say, live the worldly life. So that is therefore quite similar to this verse coming under this Kaggavisana Sutta. We are here also, this Pacheka Buddha also emphasized that we are without having kind of an attachment, without having any kind of a responsibility towards those sensual, objects. So one is capable of being alone, to have a solitude, have kind of a solitude or solitary life when it is necessary. So it doesn't mean in a way that everybody has to become monks. But on the other hand, time to time, at least, having your own time, having some kaya viveka, at least some physical seclusion is sometimes needed. Because otherwise you are constantly doing and doing a lot of commitments, a lot of responsibilities, and you have no time to take care of yourself. Just to reflect or just to have kind of a introspection. So such introspection is necessary for your own well-being. And you have to see, how is my health? How is my mental health? So am I growing in the path properly? Or am I constantly in the downfall? So in order to have such reflection, you have to have some amount of rest, some amount of relaxed situation, and some amount of seclusion. So therefore, the seclusion is something that we time to time need necessary to enjoy. And it is not that you are trying to cut off everyone, not going to have any friends, and being alone every time and trying to become a selfish person. Rather, you being alone, you reflect about your own situation and you are able to recognize your various habits and your own difficulties and your own shortcomings, and can do a kind of a good introspection. As a result of that, so you are able to rectify those issues. You are able to come up with good solutions because you have some peace of mind. So therefore, having said that, so we can understand that this approach is quite common in the what we call this Kaggavisana Sutta. The whole theme is that. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
Avsar Bhante, currently there are 5 questions. Question number 1, general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for your valuable service. We have immensely benefited from your practical teachings and techniques to develop a regular practice. During sitting and also in walking over this time period, got used to look at the mindful object as a third person to see the transformation of the object as well as the changes in the mind when the observation is being done. This third person view seems gradually developing into something automatic and habitual. I've heard that once you keep on practicing mindfulness, it will automatically get seeped into or induced to other activities and day-to-day engagements. Is this the same for observing things as a third person? The reason for my question is due to the observations I have sometimes when I go to sleep, just before waking up or when having dream. Sometimes I perceive sleeping as a third person observing just before switching off. The same scenario in waking up as well. Multiple times when I was having a dream, I could observe it as a third person in between the sleeping person and the one inside the dream. I could willingly drift away from the dream to the body sensations of lying on the bed. Example, pressure from the head on the pillow and vice versa. This might sound a bit silly, but honestly, I don't know if the one who is perceived as sleeping is having a dream, or the one who is in the dream flying like an eagle above a beautiful waterfall is having a dream of a sleeping person. It is hard to say which one is real and which one is the dream. Thought of checking with Bhante if this is normal as a practice, as a result of the practice observing phenomena as a third person. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think we can answer in a way like when we are going to sleep. So during the sleep, we are going to a more deeper levels on our consciousness. And on the just before the sleeping, so suppose we are in kind of a half sleep state. So we are going to another middle layer of the mind. And while we are in talking and activity and all this wake up situation, we have the typical surface kind of a mind. So even through the modern psychology, so they are coming up with these various layers, kind of a layer concept of the mind. And again, they have recognized during these different levels, so the even the brain emits different kinds of waves. So therefore, probably when your mind is in a deep sleep, so you may be having kind of a situation where you perceive it. I don't know, it's difficult actually. During the such a deep sleep, it is mentioned that there are no dreams. Only the half sleep state that you may get dreams. So that is the kind of explanation typically given. Maybe during the half sleep state, probably you may have kind of an in-between situation where you are not awake, you are not deep sleep, but in the middle. So probably such perceptions are there. Actually, again, during the meditation practice also, we are coming to the, say, half sleep state, but it is not sleep. So that's the difference. So there are various experiments have done. So the same kinds of waves are emitting from the brain, but you are fully awake. So that is the beauty. So the mind is well relaxed, but again, mind is active. So it's kind of a difficult thing to understand. Say, for example, so suppose there is a waveform which is emanating from the brain, emitting from the brain, when the brain is fully active, you are laughing, you are talking, and you are thinking and all these things, there's a kind of a wave which indicates a lot of activities happening. You are quite active, you are fully awake. And on the other hand, there is a waveform which emits from the brain when you are in deep sleep. So this both are possible in the sense while you are awake, the deep sleep kind of waveform is emitting from the brain when you are meditating, especially in the relaxed kind of vipassana situation. So such thing is possible. So these are certain new findings. And so therefore, I don't know whether you are going to the in-between kind of a region and you are able to recognize, still you are not into the deep sleep. Again, you are not in the wakeful situation, but in between, so therefore don't know whether you are experiencing this sort of a thing. So I have only this to say, and probably, I don't know, there are some dream analysis done through the modern psychology, and don't know whether we can go for such kind of analysis to give you a better answer. And this is what I can say from my limited knowledge. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 5. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, this is related to my mindfulness practice and being aware of thoughts and mental proliferation. The practice I have started with this program is really helpful to manage my day-to-day mental stresses and proliferation. I am a hot-tempered, restless person who gets easily frustrated when others are not aligning with my thinking. Due to this, I have gone through a lot of stresses and people around me suffered as well. During the initial stages of my practice, this situation became worse, but Bhante's kind advice helped me to continue with practice. After some time, 1 year, I am in much controlled state to manage my frustrations, temper, and anger. I still get these negative feelings often when dealing with others, but can observe the process mindfully before they take over me completely. I am pleased to say that there was no occasion recently that any anger or aversion lasted more than 5 minutes. When I get aware of the body changes with these mental status and start observing my thought process, the mental proliferations go down easily. I can recall before practicing mindfulness, I used to spend hours and hours or days with these agitations. Now I can easily focus on my body changes first and then the thoughts arising. After a few minutes, the volcanic eruption of my thoughts go down and I feel the difference of the state of mind and the calm and serene mind. This gives me enormous joy and comfort, similar to the comfort I get when I sit down for practice and feel the sitting posture. The link between the mind and body is clearly visible in these cycles. Presume with time, whatever the agitation and stress coming up, will go down as well. Thought of writing this down and appreciate the guidance and support we get from Bhante. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, it's good. I mean, not a real question. Kind of a practice that you are being somewhat successful. So keep going on and again try to move more towards now the investigation, because now you have already established mindfulness. You have able to maintain sort of continuous mindfulness. Without stopping there, try to see various phenomena more in a descriptive manner and sort of introducing clear comprehension to your experience. Suppose you are doing walking practice and when your foot is touching the ground, not just keeping your attention only to the surface level, rather recognize what are other phenomena available, what are the changes happening. Is it the same way that the whole foot is being felt? And what are the areas that is recognizing different kinds of say, element characteristics. So likewise, so you got to somewhat introduce investigation. So this investigation is the one helping us to improve wisdom. So that is necessary. So therefore, it is good that you are able to calm down the mind, to relax and not to go for kind of an impulsive activities. Rather, but without stopping there, now try to develop clear comprehension to various activities, to various phenomena that you are experiencing during sitting and walking. Then actually you can further grow in your practice. Yeah.
The next question is number 3. I need a bit of help, so I might give it to Auntie to read out. It's in Sinhalese.
This question is actually a Pali, it looks like a Pali stanza. I just share it as well to you, but I will read it out. So, dear Venerable Pante, would you please be able to explain upanna upanna kama vitakka nadi vaseti
Anubhavankameti. So actually it is written in the wrong way, but the proper thing is uppannuppanne, not only actually uppannuppanne, uppannam kama vitakkam nadivaseti pajahati vinodeti dyanti karoti anubhavankameti. So similarly it is mentioned for vihinsa vitakka, similarly it is mentioned for vyapada vitakka, and then it is as a together taking Buddha mentioned uppan uppanne papake akusale dhamme nadivaseti pajahati vinodeti dyanti karoti anubhavam gameti. So you want me to explain what it means? So is it the question?
Yes, Mandi. Yes. Yeah.
Fine. So basically, so as you know, so we have various kinds of thoughts in our mind. So typical gross form of those thoughts are categorized into 3 areas. The kama vitakka, the various thoughts pertaining to the sensual desire, various sensual desires in a way. And then the vyapada vitakka, the ill will. And the vihinsa vitakka, some sort of harmful thoughts and harming others. So that kind of thoughts are called vihinsa vitakka. So those are the gross forms of vitakka, gross forms of thoughts, intentions we have in our mind. So when such thought is recognized, so rather than entertaining it, you should try to overcome it. You should try to remove it. But there are various approaches to do it. Now say, for example, you are not a mindful practitioner yet and you don't have enough mindfulness. So when you are simply watching the mind, assume that you get entangled further. So this kama vitakka, the desire, sensual desire start to grow. So that indicates your mindfulness is not grown yet. On such situation, you can use, say, asubha bhavana, so that you are sort of counteracting with the repulsiveness of the body. Because what is arisen is, say, kama vitakka, sensual desire. So you are counteracting it with the opposite, that is, you are recognizing the body, reflecting the body as something loathsome. So when you are reflecting like that, the arisen sensual desire may start to subside. But on the other hand, say if you are able to develop mindfulness, and once you are being aware of various sensual desires and you are able to keep your attention on to them, then because of the developed mindfulness, so those thoughts start to kind of fade away. They start to blur. They start to weaken. So likewise, there are many methods that you can approach depending on the situation. And somehow you are trying to remove the various thoughts, these unwholesome thoughts arising in the mind. So uppannam kama vitakkam nadivasati. Nadivasati means that you are not being patient with them. You are not trying to just be with them. Rather, you are now trying to take some action. Pajahati, you are simply removing them. Nadivaseti pajahati vinodeti. You are refraining your mind from thinking about those. Vinodeti byanti karoti. So you are sort of subsiding them or making them fade away. Anabhavam gameti. Almost like they haven't arisen to that level. So you are removing them. So those are the terms, those Pali is referring.
Question number 4 of 5. This is mindful sitting. Dear Swaminwansa, I have learned and practiced mindfulness on breathing and the walking process under your guidance. My breathing practice all the time ends up on focusing on the sitting posture and the elemental characteristics associated with the body. Due to this reason, I would like to try the technique of just be after sitting down comfortably. My sitting posture is full lotus or half lotus, and I can sit comfortably for 45 minutes to 1 hour. Appreciate if Swami Nwansa can give some guidance on how to start just be technique under these circumstances. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Chatu, can you repeat the first part? I didn't really understand.
Yeah. Dear Swami Nwansa, I have learned and practiced mindfulness on breathing and the walking process under your guidance. My breathing practice all the time ends up on focusing on the sitting posture and elemental characteristics associated with the body. Should I start it right?
Okay. So basically, I mean, so just be is a part of practice that you may come across after you move further. So at this level, don't just try to just be, because still there is something to do. Because you are now trying to recognize various element characteristics, and at this level, you have to do it. So there is a task to do. So at this time, don't give it up. So, but later you will slowly come to the level of just be. So at this time, you are simply observing various characteristics of various elements and how they are behaving and their patterns, how they are quickly arising and passing away. So likewise, these are actually contributing towards the development of wisdom. So that development is necessary. That wisdom part is actually necessary. That we have to do purposely. So it may not happen automatically. Rather, we have to intentionally develop this wisdom. So as we are developing this wisdom again and again, more and more, so what happens is, so this wisdom improves and it comes to some higher level. And Buddha mentioned, so as you develop wisdom, so the inevitable result is that there is a kind of a dispassion. You know, typically our mind used to grasp things. So it used to cling to various things. So that is the typical nature of the mind. It always grasping something. That is how it is sustaining itself. And but what happens here due to this practice, what happens is, so you are recognizing various disadvantages, shortcomings of what this mind has grasped. So it is used to grasp something. That very thing is very fragile. That very thing is extremely transient. That very thing is not giving us satisfaction. And it is completely vulnerable. It is beyond our control. So these kind of shortcomings now become realized by the practitioner. As a result of that, what happens, Buddha mentioned, that you are getting dispassion. So as a result of dispassion, now mind starts to let go. Now mind is giving up, not holding, not grasping, because it understood there is no point of grasping. There is nothing worth grasping. So therefore, as a result of that, now it starts letting go. So the letting go process is a natural process. It is not that you are forcefully letting go. As a result of the wisdom, you understood there is nothing worth here in grasping. So due to that, now the mind is naturally letting go. Once mind has naturally let go of, assume that you are not grasping anything at all. Suppose you didn't use in the Dhatu Manasikara, you did element meditation. So basically the main focus is onto the Rupakhanda, the material aggregate. And you are working on that. And you recognize that there is nothing worthy of grasping here. And all these elements are quite transient. And this whole body consists of these element characteristics, showing element characteristics. Outside they are also similar. So the whole physical world, so the mind is not now letting go, not grasping anything. Suppose at that time you are not grasping any feeling. You are not grasping any perception. You are not grasping any kind of a mental attribute or mental state. So then what happens? So mind start to become somewhat unestablished. So the consciousness become unestablished and there is nothing to grasp. At this level, you should do you shouldn't do anything. At this level, you should practice that just be. So this is the area that you should practice just be. And therefore, you got to wait till you are reaching this time or this region, this area. So until that, you have to actually develop mindfulness, wisdom, and that has to become a kind of a continuous practice. And you don't need to worry, or you don't need to really say have a kind of a anticipation on to got into this just be, even though it sounds kind of an interesting thing, but you can't artificially do it. Rather, you have to properly approach there. Yeah.
Question number 5. I think this might be the last one. General question. It's regarding the talk. Dear Bhante, related to the Dhamma sermon for not getting stuck, do you think in general not having a high-profile job and not being in a marriage seems quite advantageous? How about taking care of one's own mother and father, which happened beyond the choice of the individual? Can one get away from this responsibility even after becoming a rhinoceros horn? That's the end of the question.
So now I am a monk. Now I am stuck in this mindfulness for young adults session. So, so basically, I mean, we basically have a lot of responsibilities, but here the focus is, so sometimes people, you know, I mean, they don't have time at all. So they have too much responsibilities. They don't have time for themselves and they are too much entangled. And so that is where they are becoming somewhat stuck. Suppose you are trying to inform another person to assume for this program, for example. And they may give a lot of excuses. I have this thing, I have that thing, I have to take my child to the college, I have to take my child for the classes, tuition, and I have to look after my parents and all, many things are there. So I can't therefore attend to this program. Or anything else, I don't have time to go to a temple, or I don't have time to look at this and that. So many reasons are there, many excuses are there, and it may be true even, and they are fully stuck. And therefore, time to time, we in our lives, we may encounter these problems, and we have to see whether this has really come on our way, or are we going after too many things? You know, I mean, if we have sort of many unfulfilled desires, then we will never find some sort of satisfaction. We are continuously having so much of desires and we are going after one by one, trying to fulfill, and it never ends. We are constantly being frustrated because one after the other desires are arising. Suppose you are finding a job. And then still you are not satisfied. Now you want to have a, say, promotion in that job. Suppose you are going to the next level. That's still not satisfied. You want to go to the next level. So the companies also do like that. So they have that kind of a hierarchy. So in order to keep you employed or keep you somewhat involved to get the maximum from you, so they have a lot of benefits, fringe benefits to motivate you. So you are going one after the other and always occupied with those. And even the occupation becomes your life. And you don't have time for your children. You don't have time for your husband, to your wife, or even to look at your parents because you are fully entangled in the job. So likewise, many situations are there. But on the other hand, as you have mentioned here, so when you have a responsibility to look after your, say, parents, suppose you are maintaining a single life, still you have to look after your parents. Doesn't matter. I mean, so that is there. And you can't simply neglect them and also going out and leave them to die and going out. So that is also not the proper way. So we have to find out whether now the responsibility has come to me and it is unavoidable, that if that is the situation, definitely we have to take that challenge. So it is not we are trying to be a kind of a selfish person, not caring of others and just minding our own business. Rather, when the real responsibility has come to ourselves, so we should recognize that, and through that we can understand how I am approaching it, what are the best way of implementing it. And at the same time, another good thing is, while doing it, while engaging in that, what are the various defilements arising? Is there any kind of a reaction? Is there any kind of a resistance? Because the situation is not only the opportunity giving us trouble, but rather how we approach it. Say, what the kind of the resistance coming from our mind. Say you have to look after your children. So if you have kind of a resentment towards that, so I have to look after them, I have to do this, I have to do that, husband simply has gone out, I have to look them. So the, you know, this kind of a complaining mind always make things worse. It is not really the job making us really unhappy. Rather, this complaining mind, always complaining, always finding fault. So this kind of an attitude actually making things really worse. So if we are able to recognize that complaining mind, then probably we can simply let it go and we take the opportunity. Okay, looking after children or looking after the elderly parents. So we take that opportunity and we are doing it wholeheartedly and with a lot of compassion, loving kindness. So that way we are using the opportunity to develop spiritually. So therefore, whatever the opportunity, we should try to take into advantage to our spiritual growth. So that side is also there for us to think. So therefore, it is not that we are trying to be selfish, just looking after ourselves and neglecting everyone else. So that is not the message actually.
I don't think there's any further questions, Harmbinet. That's it. Because we have no questions, I'd like to finish up early. I'd like to thank Bhante for giving up valuable time. As you just mentioned, sort of stuck with this program, stuck with helping us, and also to pass on our merit.
Release me, fortunately, today a little early.
We'll try to see if we can keep this up. But we'd like to pass on our merits as well for giving up your valuable time and helping us with all these questions. And also to the people seen and unseen participating and helping and gaining some sort of insight from this program. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, there would be no program. With that, I'd like to end the session. Theruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Theruvan Sannai. Theruvan Sannai.